I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Let Me Tell You podcast from the Irish Examiner. In this podcast, we are looking at some of the most dramatic events in recent Irish political history from the unique perspective of one of the key players. Today, we want to look at the events surrounding how Ireland led the way in shaping public health policy across Europe and the world when we banned smoking indoors in March 2004. Here with me today to discuss his pivotal role in that move is former Taoiseach and current Taoiseach and Minister for Foreign Affairs, Micheál Martin. Taoiseach, you're very welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much indeed, Paul.
It's a very interesting story. We touched on it there, that we led the way. Before we begin, we have a clip. Let's hear it.
15 years ago today, I introduced the smoking ban in the workplace, which gave protection to workers from the harmful effects of passive smoking. It also transformed the quality of life and the experience of people in pubs, in hotels, and in restaurants. And particularly for those with respiratory illnesses such as asthma, CF and many others, prior to the ban, of course, many could not go into hotels or pubs.
Taoiseach, that was you nearly 4 years ago now. The smoking ban is almost 20 years old. It's something that we all almost take for granted at this point. Can you take us back to where you were in maybe 2003 when this became, I suppose, on the agenda for the government at the time?
Well, I suppose the genesis in the first instance was I became Minister for Health in 2000, and you meet various units within the department or teams. I would have met Tom Power, principal officer at the time in the Department of Health, who was passionate on tobacco and had an encyclopedic knowledge of the tobacco industry and of the issues. And he would have briefed me on sort of ideas and so on, particularly around legislation. Which we subsequently enacted in 2002 on tobacco, banning of advertising and so on. But within that bill, it was a very radical bill, and within that bill was the idea of a ban on passive smoking in the workplace. So that was a general legislative template. We had tried to get it drafted initially from external, but the draftsman, parliamentary draftsman, tutted about that and insisted on doing it themselves. Kind of interesting in itself in drafting legislation. But we eventually got that drafted, and then we moved. That involved the establishment then of the Office of Tobacco Control. Tom Power, then the service officer, became the chief executive officer of that. And that really then began developing the capacity to really implement some of the changes, such as a ban on smoking in the workplace. So a lot of this, the genesis, is in that bill. And all the subsequent measures around disappearing it at the point of sale, you know, putting it in drawers underneath, take it away from suites, all that's in that bill. And this was just one aspect of it. The Office of Tobacco Control was very important because that developed a research capacity. It also developed consultations. So, for example, long before we announced that we were going to do the ban, we had got trade unions on board, mandate, and SIPTU in particular, who represented, both unions represented bar workers and so on. Because traditionally the tobacco industry would have patronised unions across the world, kept them on side, whereas early on Tom had the view that let's get unions on side for a potential tobacco ban, and let's frame it in the context of protecting the workers in the workplace.
But there was some kind of talk around it at the time that workplace really only referred to things like offices or shops, that it didn't really extend all the way to the pubs and clubs.
Yeah, although we were fairly clear early on that it would. But of course, the biggest opposition, came from within the hospitality sector. Because, of course, they didn't want to see it in the context of a workplace. But of course, for the bar worker, the hotel worker, the restaurant worker, it's their workplace. But that quickly became the focus for the debate and huge opposition within the industry against the introduction of the ban on passive smoking. What was also important was that the Office of Tobacco Control did peer-based review on passive smoking globally, all the studies that were done around the world. That group, Shane Allwright led it, they came to the conclusion it was a carcinogen. And the problem for me then is, well, the problem, dilemma for a minister is, your presenter was him, and Chris Timanian would have been my advisor at the time, and he said, look, this report is going to say, and this was Christmas time, I think, in 2003, January 2003, we announced it and gave ourselves a year to implement. But you kind of make up your mind here now. It's saying it's a carcinogen.
So the imperative was there, you had to act.
My view was, yeah, some people thought we'd be doing a kind of a partial ban. You know, you might do three quarters of a building or half a room or whatever like that, but I was saying to myself, could you do that with asbestos? Like
that was the situation in France where you had smoking and non-smoking sections of restaurants, and that was the law. But it wasn't, I suppose it wasn't keenly enforced at that time. Was it a hard sell around the cabinet table to go and say this? How did Bertie Ahern react?
Well, it was quite funny in the first cabinet meeting, in the sense that it took them by surprise, but I said, look, I'm going to announce this today. This was January 2003. But we'll be doing it in January of 2004, right? I remember Bertie came running down the stairs after the cabinet meeting saying, when is that coming in again, you know? So I said, I know it's 12 months' time, I said, but we've got to work on this, we've got to build up and so on and prepare people and all that. And that kind of, there was relief in his face. Because I think there was a few, probably publicans around the table who kind of said, this is daft, this isn't going to be implemented. And like a lot of people thought it was not going to be implemented. A lot of people thought it was a bit daft initially because it was completely new, and to a certain extent, okay, it was being talked about, and to be fair, there was a lot of debate within the Dáil, and the opposition were on board with this as well, to be fair.
There's a lot of publicans in the Dáil as well. So how did they react? Was your phone...
Well, they all, over the year then, like, no one took it... They all felt like, okay, I announced it in January 2003. They all felt this will be watered down by the time we get to next year. That was the general view. So we kept working away on the ban, bringing groups over, set up a public health alliance... and then the debate started heating up in the latter part of the year, I suppose, when you look back on it. And it was mainly within the hospitality. Then you get a lot of stories emanating where we were clearly of the view the tobacco industry was now firming up against this very strongly. So you'd have stories like, I always remember a front page story in The Star or somewhere, cab drivers say this is inoperable, who's going to police them? And you get all these kind of stories that sure this can't be implemented, it's ridiculous. And then there was a well-known meeting, I think it was in Tullamore, when the publicans met, and one of them sort of said out loud, like, as I carried on all the main news, we'll show them who runs this country. And that was a really tipping point moment, because the public reacted negatively against that, and I remember being stopped in the streets by people who I didn't know saying, you keep going and you ignore them. You know, and people, we certainly mentioned that people want this, like the general public want this. Politically, a lot of people thought there'd be a compromise at the end of it. And I can recall in my own parliamentary party meeting, eventually they called for a meeting on this. You know, it's getting hot. All the publicans were lining up in all the clinics, the length and breadth of the country. There'd be 10 or 15, 20, 30 publicans going into a TD at a weekend saying, you can't do this. And I remember the first six speakers were against it, and I said, geez, I'm in trouble here. But look, I always say Michael Mulcahy was a TD at the time. He sprung up, said, I'm for this. And then four or five more came, which enabled me to say it's been a very good discussion, and I'll take on board the views that have been expressed, and I'll talk further on to people. But it was interesting. Then, I'm jumping here, the Ardèche was the crucial one for our own TDs, because the Ardèche gave a unanimous standing ovation to myself, but not only me. We had brought in... I remember Noel Davern was the great opponent, the late Noel Davern, great character, but smoked like Charlie's back. And there was a cardiologist in Cork, Tom Ahern. He was the first cardiac surgeon. Sorry, he's a cardiac surgeon. They came to Cork. And I said, we made him a Fianna Fáil member overnight. I said, would you do me a favour? I need you down at the Ardèche in Killarney. He was in Killarney. And I want you to get up and talk about your experience as a cardiac surgeon and tobacco. And he did. And he got a standing ovation. And I remember Davern coming up to me, because Tom was originally from Tip, and Davern was a funny kind of guy. He said, of all strokes to pull, you know, to produce a cardiac surgeon at the Ardèche. And a lot of members were telling their TDs, get in line. There was a queue waiting to meet me going into the Ardèche, because I'd just done the Late Late Show. There was a big Late Late debate the previous night, which was 50%. I think Pat Kenny was the was doing the late at the time. That was 50-50, you know, 50% of the audience, he had lined up with different groups against it, 50% for it, and so on like that. And so it was probably the first ever major public health debate in Ireland, ever.
Was there ever a moment, you've kind of mentioned, touched on the fact there, that the tobacco industry wasn't coming to this fight empty-handed? They would have had huge resources to kind of push that debate and make it look organic, as you've kind of touched on. Was there ever a point where in that year you thought, I might have to water this down, we might lose this debate?
Oh yeah, there's moments when we were quite worried. Like, we were always conscious of a legal battle, and that they may go to the courts. And eventually we set up our own, we actually brought on senior barristers and retained them, because we discovered the tobacco industry had retained all the big houses in Dublin.
Right.
So we couldn't get at them. So we got senior barristers in to come in. Rory Brady was a fantastic help as Attorney General. The other moment was the Hospitality Alliance went to New York, and they came back saying thousands of jobs were lost in New York, because New York as a city did the ban. So I then decided, okay, let's go to New York ourselves. I often joke afterwards it was the first ministerial pub crawl officially in New York. I went around to pubs, literally. I remember a young Tipperary lad behind in one bar. He didn't recognise me from Adam. I said, oh, does smoking ban go in New York? He said, first 3 or 4 weeks, difficult, flying ever since. And we got very rave reviews from the people working in the pubs, because they said, first of all, it's cleaner. Hotels were quietly for it, but they couldn't really put the head above the parapet. And I always remember the hoteliers had come to me. I think it was Dick Burke, was formerly of Juries, came to me quietly and said, look, Hotel Federation, not 100% against this, because we reckon we'll save a lot in furnishing and paper, and, you know, decor, sorry, and all of that. But the restaurants and pubs were more opposed to it. So that moment with the New York thing gained traction for the Hospitality Alliance. The other would have been the legal side of it. And every now and again, you'd be worried, would there be a wobble on the political side? Towards the end, and the other big wobble then was getting the legislation right. And eventually we brought in primary legislation. We didn't just rely on the Tobacco Act. We had to harmonise that with health and safety. So that got very challenging and difficult. And then, just prior to January of 2003, unknown to the department, this EU, which is quite well known now, anything that might affect internal competition in the EU, you had to send it to the Commission for 3 months' notice. The Germans invoked it, and the Austrians did. Now, the Germany at the time was seen as a bastion for the tobacco industry. They had huge influence in the German government. So they essentially delayed it for 3 months. And we had to announce that in January, that we couldn't go ahead in January. Now, I got a fairly bad doing at the time in the media, and so on. I remember the Irish Times had one scathing editorial about this delay and all that. In the end, it proved very useful, because, of course, it meant a March start, and the weather was much better, and people actually were outdoors genuinely, even, you know, not roaring. But could you imagine trying to start it in a very cold, freezing January? So in hindsight, it was a great blessing that was invoked. But I remember going to the German, going to the Austrian. I remember asking John Gormley had any influence in the German Greens, because they were in government at the time. And he said, no. So John told me they're impossible. They've just this relationship with the tobacco industry in German politics.
So after that delay then, the ban comes into effect on March 29. We have a clip from that day.
Done at Dublin's fruit and vegetable market, and not a cigarette in sight. This is a workplace covered by the ban. As the new law took effect, early morning workers had mixed views.
I think it'll be good for the country at the end of the day. And I'm a devil for the cigarettes I eat them, but sure, we'll have to live with it.
At Brendan's early morning cafe in Smithfield, diners were having a smoke-free breakfast.
I think it's a good thing, all right. Like, it might give me an incentive to give them up altogether, like, you know, so hopefully now it'll be a good way of giving them up. Very upset about the whole thing. I'm upset with the intrusive nature of the government in every area of life.
So there was, I suppose there was some talk, and you kind of touched on it there, that this... the ban would kind of come into effect, but people would just quietly ignore it, that it wouldn't be enforced. Were you worried about basically introducing a piece of legislation and a set of regulations?
That was the panic, yeah. I mean, not panic, but the fear. Like, what happens if there's mass disobedience? You know, what do you do? I think what we learned as the debate went down is that the public wanted this, actually, in the end.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
But the New York public health people were very good, gave us very good advice. They said, have you done anything on compliance? And we looked at them, because we asked them that question, like, if you were doing this again, what would you do differently? They said, we'd worry less. We wouldn't be as fearful. People will implement this, but you need to work on the compliance. And what does that mean? It means in advance, working with the publicans, the hoteliers, saying, here's what you must do. Put up a sign, get rid of the ashtrays, basic steps. Compliance isn't going in day one, finding someone and or whatever. And the environmental health officers were fantastic. I mean, we asked them, would they do that work? And they did it with enthusiasm. They looked for nothing. Just said, because they were committed, passionate people on this anyway. And they implemented that side of it for us. But that would have been the fear. But the New York public health kind of put us at ease and said, actually, the public will go with this. And generally, that was the position. There was one breakout in Galway, remember it. But the Attorney General came down like a ton of bricks with affidavit, or not affidavit, kind of legal letters going and saying, what would happen? We'll sequester assets and everything. So it was kind of... but it didn't last very long, and there was, you know, the public wanted it. That ultimately, and it's a great lesson for me later in life in other legislation. You know, there are certain people do obey the law, and there was a really fair wind behind it by the time we got to implementing it.
There's a possibly apocryphal story about the Jerry Ryan show sending reporters to pubs across Dublin. Was that when that? You know, the story goes that, you know, they had the reporter take out a cigarette at the bar, and the barman told him, you can't smoke that here, first day of the smoking ban. Was that the kind of moment that you thought, I think we've won here?
Yes. The report came back at about 6 in the morning, I think, when the Dockers pub, you know, the late hours, as we call them, in when Jerry's researcher, apparently, opened the cigarette. You know, guy was observing and behind the bar, put in the cigarette box on the counter, took out the cigarette, all this kind of work going on, and he just said nothing. And that, as she was about to light up, he said, no, today's the smoking ban. And the chair went up in the Department of Health, apparently, when they were listening to this. So that was the moment, yeah, and we said, we're out the gap here. By the way, there would have been, like, I always called him my guard of honour, like, in fairness, it was the chronic smoker was opposed to this, the person on 20 fags a day plus. The person on 5 fags a day, we were beginning to get evidence research showing they want to give up. So anything that helps them to give up, they'll go with it. Same with the 10 cig person. And so your chronic smoker was in the 20 plus sort of fags a day. They were kind of against it strongly. And you'd meet them going into the pubs. I would, like, and they'd be I call them a guard of honour, like, and they'd be kind of, just because you were out here, no, not just going to stop.
There was a very high-profile example of the law being broken in the Dáil itself when Fine Gael's justice person, John Deasy, lit up. What was the reaction to that? I mean, that was, I suppose, from a public point of view, it kind of almost hammered home the government message that you know, nobody's above flouting this law, that you can kind of be punished.
I was very surprised that John did it at the time, you know. John would be, in fairness, John has... comes from a tradition of strong independent thinking and so on like that. I think Finian, Grab was the other guy who he voted against it, Finian did at the time, and good old debate with him on it and so on like that. But I was surprised at the time, and then I think it was Andy Kennedy didn't move very quickly at the time to stamp it out, to be fair to him. And I think that did send a powerful message that there's no one flouting the law or fudging the law here, you know.
Were you conscious then of that civil liberties aspect? We heard in the clip there about intrusiveness in government life. And you yourself would have been seen as kind of almost, I suppose, some of the criticism was personal around you. You know, Micheál Martin doesn't like, you know, people being unhealthy, or, you know, feels it's okay to impose his beliefs on people. Were you conscious of that? Was that something that you
were... Well, we were. I mean, when I mentioned Tom Power earlier, Tom passed away subsequently, and when I mentioned he was an had an encyclopedic knowledge of the industry, we anticipated all of this. And one of the key weapons of the industry was to create the nanny state idea. It's interesting, you know, people picked it up. This is nanny statism gone mad. They're going to dictate to you how you're going to live your life. And that's the powerful weapon against public health in general. We had a bit of it during COVID. You know, similarly, it's a classic. Public health people are seen as nanny statists who want to just interfere in your life. And the libertarian will say, I live my life in whatever way I want to live my life. The key here was framing this in the context of a worker protection legislation. That was what won it in the end. Because we have a duty to the worker that you create a healthy and safe environment. And that was the key, I think, legislative template that got this through and defeated the nanny statism argument. I mean, that was a big weapon by the industry, which they deploy all of the time. You know?
It was a success. It garnered a lot of international curiosity. We have a clip here.
The story has clearly caught the imagination of the world's media. Dublin was today swarming with camera crews and journalists from as far afield as Japan, Russia and the United States.
Well, there seems to be a huge amount of interest. Remember that in the United States, in New York, smoking was banned in public spaces there. So there's some sort of precedent for it there. A lot of interest from the American domestic audience as to how this is going to go down in Ireland.
The Minister for Health, Micheál Martin, talked his way through countless interviews, including with TV stations from Norway, Sweden and Holland, which are all introducing similar bans soon. It seems interest has been sparked by increasing health concerns, a fascination with the Irish pub undergoing such a change, and the idea of a government legislating on it.
Well, huge interest, because I think what our countries have in common is a love of legislation that then isn't always applied. There is a ban, for instance, in restaurants in France, where parts of the restaurant you're not supposed to smoke, and you know, but if you go to a restaurant in Paris, you'll find loads of people flouting the law. So.
And what all these foreign journalists and their audiences will want to know next is how exactly the ban works here.
So next year we'll be looking at 20 years of this ban. It's been relatively seamless. I mentioned today that there's kids born today who can legally drink who've never been in a pub where you could legally smoke, which is, I suppose, is that a point of pride for you? Is the fact
that... Yeah, I mean, that was the ultimate achievement, that we would denormalise smoking. And that was part of the wider agenda too, you know, in terms of tobacco. Because when I became Minister for Health, there was various data, you know, and the data tells you smoking kills. Of all products, you know, this one kills, but it affects every kind of a disease. And I always remember watching looking at a skeleton at WHO in Geneva, and there's about 100 diseases springing from the body caused by tobacco. So I was very determined about it. To me, if you're Minister for Health, it should be a passion for you, no matter what your views are. You're the Minister for Health, you have a fundamental responsibility on prevention, lung cancer, heart disease, stroke, respiratory, CF. You know, my own nephews, I didn't realise, one of them had asthma. Brother had told me I never went into a hotel with him or a bar with him until this thing happened, and so forth. The public health doctors, the Ash, Luke Clancy, Fintan Howell, and Deirdre Galán would have worked with Christie as two advisors. It was a huge effort. Eamon Corcoran, Michael Kelly, the Secretary in the department. So the department got well behind it. I think the fact that it had the impact it had subsequently on health, and that then other countries started following suit, you know, and it was very interesting. The debate across the European Union was interesting. John Reid was the head secretary in the UK. He was not a happy punter. He said, "What are you trying to do to me?" You know, because suddenly the movement grew from the grassroots in the UK. And then Salmond came over here, I think, and he wanted to do an initiative, and he was sceptical first. He left Dublin then, kind of convinced, and Scotland did it, I think, first. Or Wales were first, Scotland, and then I think England.
And other countries did row in behind and used the Irish template and used the Irish example to kind of sell it. Was that something you were proud of to kind of?
Absolutely. I mean, I was thrilled when the House of Commons on a vote of conscience. They gave them a vote of conscience on it. It was a free vote, and I was in with Enterprise Ireland at the time. I'd moved on from health, and it was great sense in me that UK now had followed suit. The big thing was at the time, they couldn't get their head around Ireland banning smoking in the Irish pub. Like there's this image of the Irish and the pub. The Department of Foreign Affairs said it was the highest inquiries they ever received in any one day into the embassies all over the world. I underestimated all of that myself. I didn't, when the ban happened, I didn't anticipate Japanese crews, the European crews, CNN, they were all here. And I was kind of more relieved to get it over the line. Suddenly they're all in Bewley's when we launch it. So the international interest was something I hadn't quite anticipated, the degree and level of it, you know. And I think it was the New Zealand health minister said to me, I mean, I'm telling our people, she said, if they can do it in Ireland in a pub, we can do it anywhere. And I think gave people the sense that this is doable.
Is it strange now to see that if you go to EU buildings, there's still smoking rooms? Is it strange for you to see that?
Yeah, I'd be kind of annoyed about it, yeah.
Then the impact, I suppose, of e-cigarettes and vaping in Irish pubs now, it's a lot easier to kind of get away with discreetly doing that. Yeah. Do you think that's kind of working around the law at the minute?
Yeah, I would be of the view that this is the tobacco industry coming back at us. It's the revenge of the industry, and I'm very angry about it. I think the number of children and young people vaping now is too high, and we have to start again and sort this out. There is legislation coming to ban under 18s vaping, but vaping, what strikes me about vaping is no one seems to have done any quality control research. How does a product like that end up on the market? Like, we've lots of quality control around a lot of food products and so forth, but this new product, which nicotine at the core of it, has emerged, and it's again, just like cigarettes were, it's again targeting the young people with flavours and so on like that to make it attractive, and that's shocking. And I think we just have to firm up faster and get moving on the legislative template to take this on, because there's no benefits from it. And there's too many young people now, a lot of parents are saying it to us, a lot of teachers are saying it to us, that the incidence of vaping is growing.
Finally then, what would you say is the overall impact of it? What's the legacy of the smoking ban? Did it achieve what you set out for it to achieve? Did it go beyond that?
It went beyond that. I mean, not only did it, the first instance was protect workers, and it did that very strongly in terms of their immediate environment. Had a positive impact on stroke, reduction of heart disease, and reduction of lung cancers. And medics keep saying this to me every time I meet them, that it was a very significant transformative effect on health. And then the ultimate prize, that, you know, the figures are there, I think it's less than 5% young people now smoke compared to 20-odd percent back then. So the denormalization of smoking, this was part of it. And the idea that, you said it yourself, there are children now today, 20-year-olds today, you know, who have never experienced the cigarette in a pub or in a restaurant or in a workplace, you know. I mean, when you look back at some of the meetings, even the cabinet meetings when we were joining the European Union, you could see cigarettes everywhere, you know. And political meetings were full of cigarettes. And the other one was musicians. You know, the musicians were thrilled. And a lot of them were getting a thank you card from Christy Moore. My regret is I didn't hold on to it somewhere, you know, because and it was right on, was at the end of it. So the musicians, even though they couldn't really come out in advance because it's their bread and butter and the venues and so on like that, can you imagine performing with all that smoke coming up at you? You know, so it just freed up life for a lot of people that we perhaps, and as I said, we hadn't envisaged in the beginning. So you look at people with CF, cystic fibrosis, with asthma and so on like that, they could now go into pubs and restaurants properly and hotels. I think it was the denormalization of tobacco for young people.
Brilliant. My thanks to Micheál Martin for joining us today. This podcast is produced by Daniel McConnell and myself, Paul Hosford. Join us next time for another episode of Let Me Tell You. Bye for now.
On Formative, middle school kids from New York City public schools interview a phenomenal collection of grown-ups.
Me, like, I don't know what I want to do.
You don't have to have all the answers.
I feel like a lot of people's favorite topics are, like, interest in their life.
That is a really good answer.
The podcast where the leaders of today are interviewed by leaders of tomorrow. Listen now at newyorkedge.org/formative or wherever you get your podcasts.